Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
What is going on out there, everybody? You're listening to Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and joining me as always, the peaches to my cream, Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going out there, everybody?
Hey, brother, what is happening?
Oh, nothing, man.
Hey, what have we got going on today, man?
Oh, today, on today's show, we got developers and preservationists find historic common ground in Miami. Also, we're going to discuss some 19th century chupacabra stories.
Nice.
New Bigfoot screams are recorded in Washington. Floating at the Zero Gravity
Institute.
With Cam Hale.
That's right.
And then after the break, we're going to get into our interview with Mr. Christopher O'Brien about his new book, Stalking the Herd.
Oh, yeah, that was a great one.
It's going to be good, man.
It's going to be awesome.
Did you have a good Easter?
I had a great Easter. Lots of time with the family. Good food. Everybody.
Yeah.
What about you? You have a good time?
Yeah, I had a good time.
The boys
got
lots of candy?
We had two Easters to go to, so we got double of everything. Double food, double Easter egg hunts. We got everything. All the kids got tons of candy and... Yeah, it was good.
I didn't get...
They actually were pretty good, though.
I didn't get any candy. Man, I'm trying to cut back on the candy. It's not a fun thing, either. I'm not happy with it.
No, I didn't eat any either.
I love chocolate.
Man, I like chocolate. Me some chocolate.
It's just not working out for me, man. And I need to cut back. I got to drop some of these LBs, baby. I got to get this girlish hourglass figure back. Anyway, enough about me being fat. This is something that we've covered in a previous show. Me and Kyle, you know, kind of kept a little tab on this whole thing. So it all goes back to the little stone circles and the stone peg holes and things that they found down there in Miami and the ancient cultures that they know existed down there. And it's been in, I guess, of court some, and they've been kind of battling over it back and forth.
If nobody remembers this case, here's a little news clip.
A huge find in downtown Miami this week. Archaeologists uncovered an ancient Native American village that could date back 2,000 years. It's being called one of the most significant prehistoric sites in the U.S. The Miami Herald reports over the past several months, archaeologists have dug up 8 large circles made up of uniformly carved holes in the limestone. Historians believe these could be foundation holes for Tequesta Indian dwellings. Tequesta Indians occupied an area along the southeastern coast of Florida near the Miami River, but many of their villages were found deserted by the late 18th century. The site falls inside a designated archaeological zone and was originally being cleared for an entertainment complex last year. Chairman of Miami's Historic and Environmental Preservation Board, William Hopper, told NPR News preservation officials have called for a redesign of the project to save as much of the site as possible.
It wasn't really until probably September that we began to have an idea of the significance of the find there. But we want to see what we can do to preserve as much of that as we can so that people in future generations can have an understanding of what happened there at the mouth of the river.
So if you people remember, this was an archaeology site that was discovered while they were trying to pay, you know, construct this new building. Well, we'd always worried, you know, I remember specifically you were talking about, well, how long do we... What's the date we want to set where we decide that we need to keep things or decide that it's not worth saving? Remember that whole discussion?
Yeah, the hopping off point of how long is it? Is it too new? What's too new and what's old
exactly.
enough to save?
So we didn't know what would come of this. It looks like they actually have come to terms with the developers and preservationists have met and they've decided to preserve a large portion of it and then use another portion of it to develop some stuff. So they've revamped everything. They said it's going to be one of the most robust preservations of any site in the southeast of the United States. So they're going to have a glass that's going to be covered like a glass floor and stuff. I haven't seen any of the schematics or the plans of the thing, but it sounds like it's going to be a really neat site. So
how cool would that be if you could do that where you had like maybe the whole floor of even even if it was a shopping center, maybe one section of the floor of the shopping center is covered in glass.
I think that's exactly what they're, I mean, I'm not saying that exactly, but that's what they're doing. They're incorporating, preserving it. And then also being able to develop the area for, you know, whatever they were.
Where you can come
there.
Through and look at it. Yeah. Like after, I'm sure they're going to study it. I'm sure they're going to go in and do what they need to study it. But then after that, when you can say, okay, we've studied it all we can. Now we just need to preserve it. Seal it up like that, where when you walk over and look down, you're walking over all of it. You can visually see it. That would be awesome, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be neat, right?
Yeah, I think that's a heck of an idea. I'm glad that they could actually come to an agreement and maybe things, you know, maybe it's a changing in the times. Maybe people are actually beginning to kind of get on board with the idea of, you know, these things are worth saving and we need to make sure that we save this and we can all work together. You know, we're not going to make it impossible because I know some of the people in the past have been really hard to work with.
Well, you're right. So. And I also remember reading, I mean, or a couple months ago, or maybe it was even early last year, they were putting a new road or highway system in Brazil or Peru or something. Mm-hmm. And they were just totally just destroying all this ancient structures, all these walls and stuff. They just didn't care.
Yeah. Maybe this is slowly people are finally getting on board, you know, and that's going to be pretty awesome. I'm glad that's happening.
Me too. Next, I'm going to talk about some 19th century chupacabra stories. Have you ever been to the website Fortiana?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, well, it comes from there. It's a great story. And apparently, you know, these stories of chupacabras are not just from like the 1990s in Puerto Rico, but actual Charles Fort in one of his books made mention of some strange occurrences as far back as 1810, it says.
Really?
Yeah, he goes on to say that something was roaming the countryside, draining livestock of blood. Fort goes on to describe how a large dog was killed, at which point the killing ceased, and that this was nothing more than just a large dog. But it also goes on to talk about they apparently people were killing dogs all over the English countryside because they thought that's what it was. But something even from early 19th century was doing the same types of things that are reported in chupacabra sightings that we see now, where the animals are drained of all their blood. They had puncture wounds. People witnessed it. Some even talked about and maybe had some wings or mangy dog looking thing. So this is not a new creation, as I had always thought. But apparently these stories have been going on for a long time. Even with the spikes on its back, it was
really
sighted. Yeah, and a lot of these cases were they were taken from newspaper clippings in the area.
Well, and after talking to the man that we're going to be interviewing a little later, after speaking to him, the tales of animals with their blood completely drained out may not always be the most accurate when certain people, you know, report them. Because, I mean, he's even talked about it is, you know, a lot of these things that people reported seeing with their blood drained, it was really still in the animal. It had just ran to the lower parts of the animal.
Exactly. So, I've always wondered that. It's like, how do they always, when they come up on these animals, they're like, oh, they drained them of blood. Well, how do you really test that?
Yeah. Now, he did say, of course, you know, he did find some that were, have been drained, but that's what makes me think of that right there. And maybe this, what they're alleging is a chupacabra, which to me still looks like a hairless coyote. Maybe that's what this really is it's just no more than predation. Not with what Chris is talking about, but what this chupacabra attacks from England. Maybe these wild dogs or whatever they are is nothing more than predation, and that's really what they really were. I mean, they said that they killed the dog, and all of a sudden it stopped. Well, I mean, it kind of would make sense. Then.
In maybe certain areas. There's other areas, I said, where numerous dogs were killed, and it didn't seem to stop.
Oh, really?
Doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll put links to it.
And I like the spiny back. I like the fact that they had the spiny backs and the wings and stuff, just, even back then, maybe.
Like, I thought it was interesting because I had really never thought I've ever heard of any chupacabra sighting before, like, the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there's a sighting. Now, they didn't call them chupacabras in these stories. These are stories from, you know, a long time ago. They don't say it's a chupacabra, but the similarities between what has been what has happened, what has transpired, is exactly the same as what they claim that
the physical traits do. That were left, and then some of the reports of what it looked like.
Right, how this animal kills farm animals and then doesn't even eat them. Remember how they just kill them and leave them?
Well, it goes back into what we always said. You can always usually dig around. You start finding more and more history of some of these things if you really get in and start looking.
Exactly. Did you see they had some new Bigfoot screams recorded in Washington?
I have seen a little bit of that, and that is very, very interesting.
I got some clips here for the people to listen to. Okay, before I start this clip, this was apparently taken in, what did it say, Lake Ellen in Ferry County, Washington. Now, the guy that posted this, his YouTube name is Grassman58.
The Grassman.
And he claims that they were camping and they have these digital recorders set out. I guess he's a squatcher. And they picked up these sounds. Now, I want you to go ahead and listen to this.
Bring it on.
Now, it's supposed to be verbal howls and also wood knocking. So that's what you're listening for. Okay, my first off,
that could be anything,
right? I mean, it's probably a wolf. He says that it's definitely not a wolf, that he's heard wolves several times, and that's not what it is. Now, the knocking, I mean, sounds to me like somebody's working on something. Like when he's building a shack or a birdhouse or something.
Bigfoot's building a birdhouse.
I have a question. And you just started to hear it when I cut it off. I'm going to play it again. I don't know what this guy is using to record this with. It says they were using a digital audio recorder. I don't know what the settings are in this thing, but listen how loud these ducks are. You ready?
Okay.
Jesus. I'm not making this up.
Turn that off.
Oh, is he inside
horrible.
A metal building?
That is
Why
horrible.
Is it echoing so much outside?
Okay, first of all, the howling sound could... Okay, he says it's not a wolf. Well, could it be a dog?
It could be.
Could it be? I mean, you know what I mean?
First of all, it's very... Here's the thing I don't like. Okay, we always complain about when you see pictures of Bigfoot. It's always blurry.
Mm-hmm.
It's never good. Or even videos, same thing. And I understand that, you know, sometimes people flip out their car phone. I mean, their car phone. Their handheld phone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're nervous or excited or geeked up. You might not be able to hold steady. Audio is even totally different than that. It could literally be anything. I could set up something, record, and then me and you could go walk 50 yards away from it, start knocking on wood, start making noises. I mean, how are you going to prove?
Did you hear that? There's one in the studio.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And like I said, maybe that is a Bigfoot. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's 100% a Bigfoot.
Well, it could be. I'm not saying it's not. I'm saying that just if you're going to try to get something and you want to prove it, man, to me, you're going to have to get some really top-notch audio quality. Now, look. I'm no master at recording. I've only been doing it a couple months, But I can tell you right now, whatever that reverb and all that is in the duck.
It sounds like a duck warning, like a duck alarm. That is horrible. It could easily be a dog. I wouldn't say a coyote. Right there. So there
that's
are coyotes
on there too. He knows that that's a duck.
That is ridiculous. I want that as a ringtone.
I want that as my alarm to get up in the morning.
But you see, he's got all these other things. How come that couldn't just be a normal dog? I don't mean like a coyote. Maybe it's a normal, you know, you've heard dogs howl whenever the ambulance goes by.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe that's what that is. Maybe it's just a dog howling and the tree knocking. Really? I mean, how fast is he knocking? Because it sounds like he's knocking with a hammer.
To me, it sounds like somebody's building something.
Yes, it's exactly.
I mean, maybe it was early in the morning, 5, 6 a.m. It doesn't say what time.
He doesn't preface
anything. Maybe
it really
was somebody building something, roofing a house or something.
Look, I'm not poo-pooing on everybody's investigation or anything like that. I'm just saying, don't come out and say, I've got recorded Bigfoot sounds and recorded tree knocking, and then that's what you come with. You know what I mean? And of course, like you said, it's you could disprove it or you could prove it. You know what I mean? There's no way. But I know that there's some other sounds that sound off of YouTube and those howls and things like that,
yeah,
that Finding Bigfoot does, that even to me sounds more convincing than that.
I'm with you. There's definitely times where you'll hear sounds that are recorded and you're like, man, I don't know what that doesn't sound like anything I've heard.
And that duck call even sounds like a guy with a duck call.
Who knows? After the break, we're going to get into our little interview tonight
with Mr. Christopher O'Brien.
That's right. He's got a new book out called Stalking the Herd.
He's written several on the San Luis Valley. And what was it? Stalking the Tricksters and things. So if you really love the stories of cattle mutilations, which I even say in the interview how much I hate that word. And, you know, I hate the idea of cattle mutilation. But this is called Stalking the Herd. And he really gets into, that book gets into the history of man's relationship with cattle. And then all the strange studies that have gone on around the world with other animals and things. And then he really brings up some really unique points that I had never really heard on this subject. So, I mean, it was a really great interview. Like I said, he's been on a bunch of shows. We were privileged enough to get him to come on ours. And we had a wonderful time talking to him, and it was great. So, man, I hope everybody enjoys it.
All right, stick with us. This is Expanded Perspectives.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
All right, folks, we have got a treat today. We are joined on air by the king of the cattle mutilation stories, Mr. Christopher O'Brien. Chris, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, man, I've been trying to get this dead cow off from around my neck for years, and now I'm the king?
The king.
There's no hope.
The cover art of the book is awesome, so there's really no
Thank you.
There's no shaking it now.
Thank you. Yeah, I was really proud of that cover. I design all my covers. Actually, the last three books I've designed, and that one I had some help from a graphic artist for some of the typeface stuff. But I just had that image of that calf hovering in the air with nature coming down and grabbing it, and then a helicopter hovering ominously above it.
You can see the fear in the calf's eyes.
Actually, I stole that picture from a photograph of a cow sliding on the pavement, running down the streets of Pamplona in Spain during the run of the bulls.
Well, it's perfect. I mean, the cover art, that's what me and Kyle always check. You know, that's the first thing that draws you into the books. And you see the cover art, like, that's an awesome cover.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. From your mouth to Amazon's minions.
That's everybody, if nothing else, you got to grab the book. First of all, it's not really a book. It's more of a tome. You have dumped your life into this book, Chris. This 600-page monster of so much information that if anybody... Let me start off by saying I hate the term mutilation. I've always hated that term.
Thank you.
Because it's not. It's just something that you can't really, I don't really know if there is a name to really pinpoint to put on it. But for a lack of a better term right now, we'll have to use mutilation. But for anybody that's into this and really is blown away by it, this is the book to read. Now, I was introduced to the first theories of it when I was younger by Gabe Valdez and some of his work when I first heard it. And then it's kind of grown from there to where now you've written a series of books that talks about the strangest stuff, and it's something that Kyle and I really relate to because it's not that really that far from us, and we've been through this area a lot of times.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, when I first got involved, innocently enough, actually, as a small-town newspaper reporter, when I first got involved in researching this subject, I was immediately smacked upside the head, and I knew that there were no one-size-fits-all answers to explain any of this, whether it's crypto creatures, UFOs, unexplained livestock deaths or animal deaths, ghosts, hauntings, poltergeist stuff, near-death experiences, abductions. I mean, you can go down the list of cultural memes that really have no one-size-fits-all answer. And in my estimation, the granddaddy Gordian knot riddle of them all is the so-called cattle mutilation mystery. This is so complex. There is so much involved here that goes back thousands of years in our relationship with livestock, how we worship the cow and bull simultaneously, equally, for several thousand years, and then how that worship, the bull worship, went to the west, and the cow worship went to the east and ended up in India. And then marching forward through time, looking at our what used to be a sacred relationship with livestock, which is now a very unceremonious relationship with livestock. And in one single super rendering plant, we can process 400 animals an hour. 80% of the antibiotics that we use in this country go into cattle to stop them from getting sick from wading around in a foot of feces and urine in these huge, massive feedlots. We pump them full of 1,700 pounds of grain, which are not really, their systems aren't developed to metabolize grain properly. They should be eating grass. So we pump them full of grain, pump them full of growth hormones to get them as fat as possible, as quickly as possible, so we can get them out of these unsanitary conditions. The average person knew what it took for that little calf being born to end up on their, in their supermarket on a piece of styrofoam wrapped in plastic. There'd be a lot less people eating meat. Now, I'm not a vegetarian. I love meat. I love wild game. I love bison. I do eat beef, but only beef where I know where it comes from and the conditions that the animal was raised and rendered and processed. I eat dairy, sparingly, knowing where it comes from. I'm very careful because a lot of the book really boils down to environmental and health concerns as it relates to cattle on the planet. There are 1.37 billion head of cattle on this planet. They are arrayed through over 940 different breeds. And what blew my mind early on researching cattle and our relationship with them is that they've determined through a genetic study that all the cattle on the planet are derived from a single herd of 80 animals that were domesticated in northern Iran 10,500 years ago.
That is a mind-blowing fact right there, 80 cattle. I don't think people realize, too, just how hard they are on the environment as far as pollutants from cattle. Being here, yeah, with always around, yeah, being always around ranches and things down here. And I mean, the number of cattle, we have large ranches in area that we live in. So we've seen it. We've grown up around it. I mean, my father had cattle. We've had horses. We've always had these things. And you see it in a day-to-day basis. You know the trouble that it goes through when you deal with them day-to-day.
Let's put it this way. The largest source of freshwater pollution is cattle. The single biggest reason why we're cutting down the rainforest is to make room for more cattle. They're the second largest producers, natural producers of methane, ozone-depleting gas. They may be third, depending on how quickly the permafrost in the Arctic is outgassing methane. They're the largest source of desertification, the creation of deserts. I don't even have to begin to tell you about some of the diseases that come from cattle. Mm-hmm. Rinderpest, Clostridia, blackleg, anthrax, mad cow disease. The list goes on and on and on. So what we're dealing with here is a ticking time bomb. As more countries become affluent and are able to afford to raise and eat beef, we're going to further degrade the environment. We're going to open up the possibility for cattle-borne disease to race unchecked through the through the human population via the food chain. And my book is not only a book about this Gordian knot called the cattle mutilation mystery. It looks at this mystery in context, how we used to revere cattle thousands of years ago and sacrifice them to the gods. And now they're unceremoniously slain up to, as I mentioned before, 400 animals an hour in some of these super rendering plants. So this is a really complicated subject. I spent 17 months formulating the various databases that for the first time have been brought together so we get a sense of how many cattle have been mutilated, especially in North America, and provide, you know, targeted sort of highlighted case histories for some of the more peculiar cases that have scientific evidence to back up the results of testing and that sort of thing. But I think it's important to really look at this in an overall sort of environmental Gaian context, because we may be dealing with the planets trying to warn us and spank us on one level.
It does seem that way. It does seem like it's bad karma circling back around to get on us at that point.
Yeah. The one thing that really impressed me early on was the realization, and nobody else has really ever mentioned this, but these unexplained livestock deaths are exclusively a Christian country phenomenon, number one. And number two, the only place where cattle are really sacred, besides some Maasai and the newer cultures in Eastern Africa, I mean, they revere the cow. Cows are their life. But in terms of a huge, you know, billion people, the Indian subcontinent worships cows. They have nursing homes for them. Hindi women will wet nurse calves if they don't have mothers. A cow is allowed to do anything, go anywhere, and do anything it wants, basically. And those cows are Brahma cattle. They're the Indian form of bovines. I think indicus is the genus or whatever the scientific term would be. They're the humped cattle that are colored, you know, basically colored white, and they have the upwards curving horns. Now, what always interested me was, you know, we have Brahma cows all over. Anywhere cattle are raised, you're going to have strains of Brahma cows. And I tried my darndest to find a single mutilation report of a Brahma, and I have been unable to find a single case anywhere.
That's strange.
Of a Brahma cow. So, you know, we're talking, you know, there may be some really interesting cultural clues kind of burbling under the surface of this whole mystery.
So we're talking Herefords and Angus and Kianina and all these others, but no Brahmas.
No Brahmas. And generally a vast majority, 98%, if I had to guess, of cattle that are found in a mutilated condition, or so-called, are hybrid cows. They're combinations of breeds. Very rarely do you have a pure strain of like a seed bull that's worth, you know, $30,000. There are cases, and I do highlight them in the book, but they're extremely rare. All these animals tend to be hybrids. And out of all the cases that I've looked at, only one case even mentioned the word Brahma because it was half Brahma. So, you know, I have to kind of equivocate a little bit here, but in terms of a purebred Brahma, I've never found a single case.
Was it a Brangus that you get in touch with?
I think it was, actually. It was a Brangus.
Yeah.
Real good bucking bulls.
Oh, yeah, they make great bucking bulls. I guess they're just hell to be studied. Yeah. You don't want to get down there and mess with them.
Well, yeah, if you're thinking about if you're going to try to abduct a cow and do some kind of test, you probably don't want to get one that's a bucking bull.
You want it to be slightly docile
before
you start messing with it.
Yeah, either that or use some ketamine or some sort of tranquilizer on it, which have been found in chemical tests of animals. We found barbiturates, mescaline, PCP, all sorts of tranks, anticoagulants. Quite a number of different drugs have been detected in examination of mutilated cows.
Wow. Now, is there any chance that there's more, is it more often bulls or steers or is it cows? Is there any difference there or is it just across the board?
I would say the majority of them are female. Okay. And you don't see as many male animals, I think, and you don't see as many steers mutilated. It's generally young cow, hybrid cows that are the target of these perpetrators, for lack of a better term.
Well, it was funny because you were just brought up something that I was going to ask later on, but it was if you're finding known, I guess you could call them stimulants, you could call them downers, any kind of sedatives, anything like that in the animal, that lends you to believe that it's being done by human beings. It's being done by a terrestrial force.
It's more than
anything that... You know, you hear all the tales, and I know you know exactly what I'm talking about, of all these different tales of UFOs or of certain things coming in,
They had no blood in them.
There's a lot of popular misconceptions out there. Very few cases feature unidentified lights or UFO-type reports. These are very rare if you compare them to, let's say, the number of helicopters that have been sighted in and around mutilation sites or the number of cases where... nothing is sighted. Those are the vast majority where nobody hears a thing. The dogs don't bark. There are no clues left behind. It's if the animal was swooped up, taken somewhere, experimented on, and dropped back in a different part of the pasture to, you know, alleviate any accidental disclosure of crime scene evidence. So this is a very, very complicated scenario. What is really, I think, important is to, you mentioned a couple of popular misconceptions. One of the things that my research associate and mentor, David Perkins, who's been involved in this for 40 years, is the first person Linda Howe called when she wanted to find out about cattle mutilation. She called my dear friend, David Perkins. He and I are co-writing an analytical book that's going to look at stalking the herd and throw the mud. Stalking the herd throws the mud against the wall. And the follow-up book will be analyzing what sticks. And one of the things he discovered early on was there's an interesting evidence chain within the disclosure of these cases, how these stories and newspaper reports and police reports filter out into the culture and how various theories actually became formulated, grew legs, and then gained a foothold within the culture, whether it's Satanists, whether it's the government, whether it's ETs, whether it's some sort of, preternatural, ancient predator, for instance. There's various theories out there. And what we've done in this book is tracked back to the beginning point of where all these various theories were first developed and how they spread through the culture. They're memes, basically. They're memes in culture, and you can backtrack them, and you can figure out when they started. Now, you mentioned all these substances found in cattle. How about the cattle that have been shot with firearms, then mutilated? You don't hear Linda Howe talking about those, and there's a lot of them.
Yeah, nobody brings that part.
Yeah, no,
up.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Since when do aliens fire small lead projectiles at subsonic speed?
Yeah. Well, and you hear, too, of course, I know it plays into some of the
extraterrestrial, but they've even found remains of the cattle in the trees. So you know that they were picked up.
Well, that's very hard. You know, there's a lot of stories, but I've really had a hard time backing up any of those stories with photographic evidence, with hard facts. We have had some cases where cattle have been found 2 miles away from where they should be on a rancher's porch. One case was found inside an abandoned adobe shack, and even if the animal had been alive, it couldn't have walked through the door. So there are some real high strange cases. We have cases where a fetus has been mutilated inside the womb. Yep. Check that one out.
There's no explanation for that. That's not trying to wrap your head around. Come on.
There's got to be some explanation.
Well, and I've also heard you discuss, too, the fact that you've visually yourself inspected the carcass and could tell where it looks like one person had started the incision and maybe was not quite as good as the guy maybe showing him, and the guy showing him took over to finish the job.
Yeah, that gets into the whole idea of red herring cases. The cases that are the highest strange and the most fantastic and peculiar and scary, for that matter, especially for the rancher, those tend to be the cases at the beginning of a wave. And then there seem to be a response number of cases that are done very professionally, maybe don't have the high strange elements, but are very well done and slick. And then as soon as the media gets involved, then every dead cow out there is mutilated and all these amateurs running around looking at things they don't understand. Oh, that cow was drained of blood. I don't know how many times I heard that, and I'd go out there in the field with my brother after the investigation was over, and we'd flip the cow over and show him where all the where all the fluids are, which pool up in the body, you know, cavity.
Always in the lowest spot.
If an animal is mutilated after it's dead, the blood isn't pumping. You have reduced blood pressure. You're not going to have bleeding wounds. There's so many misconceptions about this, and I'm not even a veterinary pathologist. I'm just an amateur here, and I can tell you right now that even veterinarians who are involved with keeping animals alive and healthy aren't up to speed on some of the pathology and, you know, looking at necrotic flesh and determining why, how the animal died, how and how it was disfigured.
Yeah, that's not something I guess they get called on a daily basis, really. They're made there just to make sure that the animal's still alive and kicking.
Exactly.
And it seems the parts that go missing are very strange, too, because I've seen predation on wildlife. And, you know, I've been on places where, been on a whitetail hunt, somebody shoot a deer and maybe not find it that night. Look and look and look and not find it. Come back the next morning. Early in the morning, you get out there, you track it, you end up finding it, and they will be literally nothing left.
Torn apart.
But, yeah, just like some bones, a little bit of hide. I mean, I've seen whitetail
tufts of
clean.
Hair.
Yeah, picked clean. We're not talking about predation like that, folks. We're talking about, like, exact pieces reached in and taken out.
Yeah, to a degree of precision that is really impressive in some cases. You know, the book is filled with, you know, documentation that talks about, you know, necropsies done on animals by vets and by, in some cases, by pathologists. And they're scratching their head going, I'm a really good surgeon. I don't know how the heck who could have done this portable, you know, with no electricity, no lights, out in the middle of a field, trying to be quiet. You know, even in a well-lit laboratory with assistants and, you know, sophisticated techniques, they have a hard time duplicating some of the incisional evidence that's left behind. So we do have a number of very, very compelling cases in the book that have, you know, quite a bit of documentation to support the high strange element. My favorite, of course, is the Sherman Ranch case up in Utah in 96, where the rancher and his wife were out checking calves and mamas. And they go out in the pasture in the morning, you know, it's broad daylight. They check a cow and her calf and you know, tag it and, you know, tag its ear and go on to the next, you know, cow and calf, you know, a few hundred yards, 300-400 yards in the same pasture. And they work on that calf. And when they come back, the calf they had just done, you know, literally minutes before is mutilated, torn apart without a drop of blood, and then the pieces are set back in almost a ritualistic fashion. there are some really well-documented high-strange cases. Now, in that particular case, a veterinary pathologist was on site that afternoon along with a crack team of scientists who did a complete site analysis and workup on the actual animal. That was part of the National Institute for Discovery Sciences project on the Sherman Ranch in Utah.
Wow. Like, cases like that is probably what gets it started with the whole extraterrestrial thing. Because, I mean, how do you explain that?
Yeah, how could it not?
Yeah, that's the first thing I would leap to, really, when I start thinking about this. There's no normal explanation for just a bunch of guys to come and do all that.
Well, you can't factor ETs out, but you sure as heck can't factor anything else out, too. This is a very complicated scenario, I've been saying for years. It appears there are multiple agendas overlapping their agendas on top of one another. There seem to be various groups involved, some more high strange than others. One thing that has really stuck over the years is the idea that it's not so much the cow, it's where the cow is in the environment. It's almost like there's some sort of environmental monitoring program that's underway, whether they're monitoring downwind and downstream of where nuclear power plants are, where we enrich uranium, mine it, weaponize it. If you go downstream from these regions, generally that's where high incidence of mutilations occur. Also, the potential spread of mad cow disease in the food chain is one that doesn't get much airtime in the pop culture view of this whole mystery. There's quite a very intriguing body of evidence to suggest that one of the potential agendas is monitoring the spread of transmissible spongiform encephalopathy in the food chain. And that's a scary thought. I mean, there's up to 1,000, by one estimate, 1,000 different animals can be in a single fast food hamburger. So, you know, if you're accidentally folding nerve, you know, infected nerve tissue in there that has these misfolded proteins called prions in there, all bets are off in terms of, the viability and efficacy of processed beef protein.
And you're right, and it's coming. We know that that mistake is bound to happen. Sooner or later, it's going to happen if it hasn't been happening quite a bit already.
Yeah, well, you know, I do go into a number of very disturbing what-if scenarios relating to that, so...
Well, and I keep going back in my mind, of course, like I said, being an outdoorsman and hunting my whole life, I know how hard it is to field dress an animal in the dark or with a friend, even holding a flashlight, trying to do it on, say, a whitetail-sized animal or an elk-sized animal, too. I can't imagine doing something with precision in the dark, walking around, you know what I mean, as far as being a person, like if I was going to go out and do this, or say Kyle and I and you were all going to go out and do this. It's one thing, like, you know, you think about hearing the stories of people cow tipping. It's a whole other thing to go out and go, I think I'm going to go over there, I'm going to dart this sucker, I'm going to get it down, I'm going to open it up, I'm going to try to suck the blood out of it, I'm going to take these few organs, and then that way it's going to be really creepy to the guy that has $1,200 tied up in this thing.
Yeah, that's not your average fraternity prank by any stretch.
And it's still a hanging offense here to steal horses and cattle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, in most parts of the West, all bets are off if you get busted.
Yeah. You'd be better off stealing a car than you would go on somebody's place and do that.
Oh, big time. Oh, absolutely. Well, again, that's what makes this mystery so compelling is there's so many disclaimers that have to go along with any particular theory. And David Perkins and I have often joked that it doesn't matter what theory you come up with, if he or I take the opposite side of the argument, we can slam dunk your theory back into the dustbin. For every theory you come up with, there's more than enough data to negate it. However, there's just enough data to make that particular theory possible and viable. So, you know, it's again, I hate to sound like a cliche, it's a Gordian knot that needs to be carefully unraveled. And we need to look at the cultural implications of this whole mystery, the effect that this has as it slowly permeates itself into culture, into cultural awareness on a conscious and even a collective unconscious level. We could be seeing, in some cases, a form of cultural stigmata, the instant manifestation of a warning to try to alert us about the the severe environmental impact that cattle have, not only on the environment, but potentially on human health.
It very easily could be that. Yeah. And I think you're right, because it doesn't seem – there's a lot of these subjects in this little niche that we're all in that people want to label as black and white. And I don't think these subjects are that way. I don't think it's an either-or. And this subject definitely isn't an either-or. It is – there's way too – like you said, there's way too many things that the minute you think you have a theory – yeah, you may have a theory on one case, but this doesn't encompass everything. You can't totally wrap it in one wrapper and say that's what does
right. I think that's what people are looking for. They want a conclusion. They want an absolute answer. And it's not one thing. It's a kaleidoscope from –
Yeah, it doesn't work that way, guys. The book has I didn't count how many cases I actually highlighted in the book, but I would say there's at least 1,000 cases. And for every theory you want to come up with, you're gonna be seeing those cases unfold that give you that ammunition to think, wow, maybe this could be the rationale, or these could be the perpetrators, whatever. And then boom, as soon as you think you have a pattern,
you get to the next chapter.
Gives you the exact opposite.
Wow.
Now, Chris, what are some other animals besides just, say, cattle that you've actually studied that have been, you know, we were talking about javelina and things like that. There's actually been other animals that have been mutilated also.
Yeah, every pretty much warm-blooded animal in a Christian country. This is predominantly a Christian country phenomenon. You name it. I mean, there was a bison mutilated in the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, right in some of the most secure, space in America, right outside of the NORAD facility in Cheyenne Mountain. And then a few months later, they had a case right at their front door of the door that goes into Cheyenne Mountain. We've had bison, deer, elk, swine. The earliest mutilation reports I can find were of sheep, hundreds of sheep being mutilated around London in 1606. Seals off the Orkney Islands were showing up headless with these strange, huge swaths of spiral incisions taking away hide and blubber. I think almost 50 dolphins washed up in southern France, all with identical wounds. The list goes on and on. I mean, goats, people, there have been some tantalizing reports over the years of potential human mutilation cases, which I do go into to whatever depth you can. These are probably the most covered up cases in law enforcement and the most difficult to investigate. But this is not predominantly a cattle it's predominantly a cattle phenomenon, but that doesn't include all the other warm-blooded animals that are found.
And the fact that you keep reiterating that its majority is a Christian-based faith, the country that it's in, that's even stranger, really.
I'm surprised nobody realized that. For the last 40 years, nobody has realized that all these places that have reported mutilations since 1606, rather, they all are in Christian countries. I have no cases from Asia. I have no cases from India. I don't have any cases from Africa that have enough documentation to really state that they're classic mutilations. There's a lot of rustling and a lot of kind of folklore and urban legend type accounts, but none of them feature the actual classic mutilation. In other words, the soft tissue organs being excised. No crime scene evidence, no ripping and tearing of flesh, no bleeding, that sort of thing. The fact that nobody has ever really realized this for all this time, it was like one of those eureka moments that I had. And it's like, whoa, these are all Christian countries.
But another thing that just when you think, like you were talking about, we were talking about earlier, you think you've kind of got a theory nailed down. And then I always go back to the necrosis that you discussed. And there are certain cases that it's so far advanced that the animal could possibly still be warm, yet it's extremely advanced where it's just falling apart.
Yeah.
Or the fact
we've
that
had warm animals pulled apart when they tried to load it onto a truck.
Yeah, or the fact that it's 5 days old and it still hasn't even began to rot. It's just been opened up.
Right, or there's a handful of very intriguing cases where even insects have died when they actually landed on, like flies, when they land on the carcass, they die. There's a number of those that are very perplexing and kind of made me a little bit reticent and very careful when I went out on some cases. In one instance, the Jerry Valario, a New Mexico State Livestock Board inspector, went out on a case. He pulled the tarp back, and some outgassing occurred. It may have been some sort of like a bug repellent that had been sprayed on the animal, but enough time had passed where it shouldn't have cooked, you know, underneath a tarp in the sun, and then literally forced him into retirement. He was hospitalized and had to retire.
Wow.
So, you know, if you see one of these cases, folks, especially you guys down in Texas,
don't
you
touch
know,
it.
Wear gloves, wear a respirator, be very, very, very careful.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I would have never thought that. I'd have been like, oh, there's one, you know, won't go around prod around on it, but that's really not what you want to do.
Yeah.
Well, at the very least, if you're going to do that, be upwind.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I've also heard
some Vicks Vapor Rub you can put under your nose. One of my most trusty tools in my mute bag.
Your go-to jar.
Oh, man. I tell you, there's very few things in life I detest more than investigating in the field a necrotic cow. Besides ignorance and stupidity, that would probably be my least favorite thing in my reality.
Well, and I remember you even talking about one of them where you actually got down and smelled it, and it after days it still smelled medicinal is the word that you used.
Well, it was a very faint kind of it's almost like a disinfectant sort of smell, but with a little bit of a deep kind of muskiness to it. And yeah, the calf was in a heated garage for 4 days, and yeah, I literally put my nose, you know, as close as I could get without touching it, and I could not smell any cadaverine, which is the molecule that makes dead meat smell bad.
That is bizarre.
It's so strange. That is so completely strange and foreign because it almost seems like, okay, the minute you think, all right, well, it's human beings. It's all right. We can label the government. We can say, oh, we've seen the choppers
or secret.
Yeah. And then you get this, you're like, well, did they inject it with something? Or, you know, what the hell? Like, and even the advance, when you talked about the animal still warm and then it just falls apart.
Like, yeah, that makes no sense. And that happened to a veterinarian. I mean, it totally blew him away. And he wasn't going to call me, but when that happened, he called me.
Man, now you mentioned this happens predominantly or almost exclusively in Christian countries. Are there any regions that it's more popular than others? I mean, is it in all 50 states of the United States?
Is it just only your valley?
Or only in like really remote areas, or is it in well-populated areas too?
It's basically from the Mississippi River west to the Continental Divide is the main area in North America. In South America, you know, in 1999, 2000, we had a complete cessation of U.S. cases. It's like all of a sudden the ranchers woke up and they weren't delusional anymore, and they weren't reporting dead animals as mutilated, which has always been, I think, the major slam dunk against debunkers saying it's all misidentified scavenger action. Well, how come cases go fast and furious for months and then all of a sudden, boom, you don't have any for 3 years? What, everybody wakes up and becomes non-delusional? So down in South America, you know, man, the cases ended here in 99, 2000, and then they had a tremendous outbreak of foot and mouth disease in the herds down there, and they really struggled to get you know, ahead of it. And when they finally inoculated all the cows and everybody felt that it was over, boom, the mutilation started. And for the next 2 years, from 2002 to 2004, there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of mutilation cases. And then they've continued all the way to the present day. And during that same time period, we have very, very few reports from anywhere else. It's almost like everybody said, hey, we've had enough fun in North America. Let's go visit our, you know, buddies south of the border. You know?
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
So, you know, there's enough evidence to suggest that there is a human element involved here. And they are monitoring cattle for whatever reason, whether it's environmental, whether it's a health-related monitoring program. And the reason why they don't, you know, steal the cattle and do it is because then the cattle would be it would be a crime. You know, people would file police reports and there'd be, you know, documentation and all that. If you leave it back there, you have plausible deniability. You can say, oh, it was just a, you know, unusual looking or appearing scavenger action. So you always have that plausible deniability if you leave the animal there. People say, well, why don't they get their own cows and rent their own pasture and, you know, raise their own beef? They do. And it shows some really good illustrations of how the EPA in an area, let's say downstream from a Superfund polluted site, they will raise animals and then take them into the lab, cut them up, and analyze their tissues. And in one case, they found out that there was 600 times the amount of heavy metals in the animals. They should have been dead. And then when the scientist who was raising the animals said, well, you got to tell the ranchers around here about this. They said, no way. And he said, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to the press. And he became a whistleblower. So there are governmental organizations, whether it's the CDC, the NIH, the EPA, whomever, there are government organizations that raise cattle and other livestock for the purposes of analyzing tissues because of environmental concern.
And then you brought up a good point right there, too, is if they need to go out and get one in the field without letting anybody know that there's a possible danger, it's a lot easier just to go out and take one, do what you want to do to it, dump it back out there, and you already have all your information. You can kind of let the story grow that it's extraterrestrial or it's a Satanist cult or something like that. You want that. You want them to take that and go with it. And then this way, you still have your information. It didn't cost you anything.
Exactly. And you have plausible deniability.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. And you're not on that trail anymore.
Yeah.
But here's another thing that nobody has really thought of over the years. Here's another element that I've uncovered. There are waves of cases that suggest that rich, large ranchers are using the mutilation mystery and phenomenon, perpetrating it on their neighbors as a way to drive small ranchers out of business and maybe expand the big ranch.
Huh. Never heard of that.
I wouldn't put it past human beings or some really creepy things. Never heard of that,
have you? Well, in the areas of high incidence in Colorado, especially parts of Kansas, the regions where were epicenters of mutilation activity in the 70s, 80% of the small ranchers that were in business back then are gone, and in their place are some of the largest concentrations of feedlot cattle on the planet.
Man,
and that makes perfect sense. That's another one of those that makes a lot more sense. The fact that they would use it to drive out any little competition because they want the rest of that land.
Now the beef, the beef lobby is one of the most powerful lobbies in this country. It's the largest single sector of agriculture, but you will never hear how powerful they are unless you're Oprah stating on her show, "I'll never eat another hamburger again," and she instantly was slapped with a $2 billion lawsuit, which cost her $1 million to beat. So just for, you know, some of you listeners out there, I love beef. Yeah. I'm going to have hamburger tonight.
That's right. That's the same thing with the Cattle Raisers Association down here.
Beef. I just love to tear it out.
Yeah, they don't realize that. I mean, that's the same thing here, the Cattle Raisers. The Southwest Cattle Raisers Association is a big, big thing here in the state.
So when you're in the classic cattle mute cases, I know there's a full gambit of things that happen, but is the most common practice they're removed, something's done and brought back, or are they rendered there on site?
It's really impossible for me to answer that with any certainty. It appears to me that the animal is experimented on or rendered unconscious or killed and then disfigured, if you will, elsewhere from where it's found.
Okay.
So whether it's taken there or whether it's found there and then brought to a different location, the animal does appear in many, many cases to have been left back in a place where it was not originally taken.
On that same note, Chris, for everybody that doesn't know, maybe there's somebody that hasn't been keeping up, what is the classic, you know, cattle mutilation or cattle disfigurement when it's reported? What's the, say, the standard, or if there is a close to, that is actually taken from the cow? What is the normal things missing?
In this very rarefied realm of mutology, for lack of a better term, the classic mutilation is a cow that generally is missing its tongue from deep down in its throat. The tongue is removed in a surgical manner, and the mandible flesh on the upside of the animal, the mandible flesh around the jawbone is taken away, and generally the jawbone is scoured clean of all evidence of flesh, hide, hair, anything. It's polished sometimes. I mean, like it's been in the sun for 30 years. That is the main thing that we look for a classic mute. Now, the second most predominant incision, if you will, or excision, would be the reproductive tract of a female cow. It's pulled out like a giant plug. It's like you reach in an 8-inch to 12-inch plug and pull the reproductive tract out with no bleeding. Oftentimes, the udder, the cow's bag is gone with a very clean incision. Sometimes an eye is gone, sometimes an ear, sometimes a patch of flesh, in some cases triangular, some cases square. No, not many coyotes that can could do that. And that would be, you know, in one way of defining a classic mute, that those would be the organs that are most often reported as missing. But the one thing that I looked in all the dozens and dozens of cases that I actually physically went out and checked out in the field, the one thing that I always did first is look for cut hair follicles. In other words, an animal, when it rips flesh, or a bird when it pecks out parts of a body, or a coyote tears flesh away, or insects when they start working their little nefarious magic, maggots and blowfly maggots and whatever, they don't cut the hair. And if you can go and look at an excision area and see, you know, an inch, 2-3 inches of cut hair, you know some sharp implement did that, and it wasn't the tearing and, you know, the ripping action of a scavenger or predator.
That, and that's perfect. That is something that I never would have. I've heard you talk about this and read some of the articles that you've been, you know, quoted in, and I've never would have thought that. That's one of those things that it's that would have blown right by me, and I'd have never would have thought, go look.
Well, that to me is the ultimate litmus test for the reality of a high strange, you know, nature of a case, is if the hair is cut. Like with a sharp knife, when you cut, you take a scalpel and you cut, try to cut the flesh off the jawbone of a cow, you're going to be cutting the hair follicles. Mm-hmm. You're not going in between them like ripping flesh would. You're going to be cutting the actual hair follicles. Now, coyotes have bad breath, but they can't, their breath can't cut hair follicles in a straight line.
Yeah, they're just not that, they're not that gifted yet. Give them some time. They're going to evolve, well, but they're not that gifted yet.
Right, and a predator is typically not just going to go for a piece of flesh random. They usually chew on the softest parts first, you know?
Well, wait, yeah. Well, what's a coyote going to be tearing off the flesh off a jawbone? There's nothing there to take back to the pups, you know?
Yeah, when you can get in there in the belly and everything else on them, that's usually all the soft parts is what always goes first.
Basically, yeah, but you can, you know, again, there are ways, especially for a veterinary pathologist, an expert. I am not an expert. I've really done my homework and become a fairly up-to-speed amateur, but a veterinary pathologist can tell fairly readily if an animal has had some sort of unusual cutting action performed on it. And the book is filled with you know, examples of these tests being conducted by professionals and them scratching their heads going, somebody cut this thing. Plus, how about the case in Arkansas? I love it. They found mescaline in it. What, a coyote went out and started like chewing peyote buttons in Texas and then ran all the way to Arkansas and injected mescaline into the animal. What's up with that?
Well, yeah, that's how he ended up there. It was a chupacabra. He had the mescaline, and he got to Arkansas because it sent him in that direction. And that's where he ended up injecting it when he bit him with those fangs they got. That's what did it.
Yeah. There was one theory that they were injecting them with PCP, and the occultists were injecting animals with PCP and then taking the blood out and tripping out on it.
Isn't it much easier just to use the PCP?
You're like, dude, you want another hit of PCP blood, bro?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, man, oh, man. I've never seen a psychedelic cow, but, I mean, I'm not going to put it past it. Maybe the cows like that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Well, wait a minute. Where do you think magic mushrooms prefer to grow?
That's, yeah, if you notice, it is always in dung for cattle or horses.
No, it's in cow dung. It's in ungulate dung.
Mm. That's how they got the mescaline in them.
Well, Dimethyltryptamine is similar in some ways to mescaline chemically, but not even close, really.
That is, it's, there's, see, that just like that, there's, we laugh about it, but there is, there's so many different fingers of all this stuff that there's no way to nail it down. Now, the book does an amazing job. You've, my hat's off to you, sir, for the work you've put in. I mean, it really is a lifetime of work.
Thank you, guys. I
appreciate that. Well, tell people where they can find your book.
Well,
or yeah, you know, let them know all of them.
Amazon will have it, you know, at a cut rate, and it's doing pretty well there. But if you'd like a signed numbered copy, I'm only signing 1,000 books, and you can get a signed numbered copy from OurStrangePlanet.com. It is a strange planet. It's OurStrangePlanet.com, or you can go to StockingTheHerd.com and. Just do a PayPal thing, and I'll go ahead and shoot you out a signed and numbered copy. And obviously, you know, I am the co-host of theparacast.com, theparacast.com, one of our top paranormal shows out there. We have a ton of guests and real good ones. And you can go there and find out more about some of the work that I do. And, of course, you know, I have this is my fifth published book. The Mysterious Valley Trilogy, The Mysterious Valley, End of the Valley, Secrets of the Mysterious Valley, really kind of give you a blow-by-blow story of my investigative work in the 90s into 2000s. And there you go.
Well, Chris, we have thoroughly enjoyed it. We know you have been a busy, busy man with bouncing around. They've had you just running wild to do interviews. You have been really on top of this, so... We really appreciate you for taking time to come on and visit with us, man.
I appreciate the opportunity too. It's really important to get you know an objective, well thought out, you know, just insightful look at one of the most intriguing mysteries of our time. I do still consider this the greatest unsolved serial crime spree in history.
I completely agree with you, and it's one of those things that I don't know if we'll ever know the true ending of what this is going to be or any more to it, but I hope you keep working on it because you do a great job, sir.
Well, I'm trying to get this dead cow out off from around my neck. You know, the ancient mariner had nothing on me. Forget albatrosses. Try about 1,000 pounds of necrotic cow flesh. That's tough to carry around. So I'm hopefully with the follow-up book that analyzes Stalking the Herd, I will get the cow thing out of my system.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
And you're back with Expanded Perspectives. Cam, what did you think of that?
I loved it, man. He was a great guy. It was a great interview. He's
the authority on cattle mutilation.
I would say so, yeah. I would say he really is the man to talk to. Like I say in the interview and stuff, I remember reading some stuff, I believe, by Gabe Valdez. And that was
Linda Howell.
Yeah, exactly. Those are the kind of things that kind of got my interest up on it. But he seems to be the guy to go to, man.
Right, and what I like about him is he has an open-minded approach where, to me, I mean, no, look, I'm not no offense to Linda. It seems like she has an extraterrestrial agenda, though.
Some people do. Yeah, some people have the agendas. And like you said, it's no offense to them. That's what they're into.
I'm not saying it's not. And that's the thing is everybody wants one answer.
Yeah.
there might, some of it might be extraterrestrial, and then other, some of the instances might be government, yeah. Then other, some instances might be cultist. There's no one answer, one shoe fits all. It's not that way. But from listening to what Chris has to say, from all the research and stuff, it definitely seems like it's human activity to me.
It seems like the majority of it is a human, some sort of human activity. Then there's a few cases, though, that just doesn't explain
it. Some of them are bizarre. I'll give you that. Some of them are bizarre.
I loved it, though, man. It's one of those things. I really enjoy it. I'm going to go back and get the rest of his books and read some more of his work. I haven't read any more of his work, so I'm going to go back and get to more of his stuff and really kind of dig around and look into it. But, yeah, I mean, it's...
Don't forget, folks, he's got a podcast of his own, the Paracast.
Yep, make sure to go check that out. Yeah, they have some really good guests.
And I'll put
there.
Links to that and all of his books on the show notes. Yeah,
there you go. There we go, working Kyle overtime.
Yeah. All right, man. You have to tell me about your experience this last weekend. And a ton of people have already been, you know, tweeting us about it and everything.
Yeah.
You were going, in case everybody missed the last episode, you and your wife were celebrating your anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So you went to Austin for the weekend. Austin's about 3 hours from where we're at, and we always go down there for fun. And you were going to go do a float lab.
First of all,
describe that to people if they don't know what it is.
Well, let me get into this whole thing. Before we get into the float lab, if you live around Austin, you live in Texas, if you just want to go to Austin for a visit, please do. It's a wonderful town. The place, the food's great. The people are great. I went to the Museum of the Weird also.
Oh, yeah. I totally skipped over that.
Yeah. Yeah. We went, and first of all, that place is great. And it has the Minnesota Iceman that toured all the country and all that stuff back in the 60s and whatnot. It has it there. I actually got to go in and see it. It is okay. It's just a whole great thing. The Museum of the Weird has all kinds of little weird, like I said, weird artifacts. There's a few pictures of me online now. I've taken one that my wife took one of me beside this, the skeletal remains of a young lady. That's a real skeleton that they claim there at the museum is haunted. And a lot of people have had some crazy things happen when that skeleton's been around, and they had some crazy stories go down when they first brought it to the museum.
Really?
Oh, yeah. But what I didn't know was I was going to get treated with some sideshow performances. Sinister Hands, Mr. Juan, when we got there, he was the one that took us through our tour and showed us all of it. He is a sword swallower and a human blockhead. So while we were there, he did his sword swallowing routine for all of us. They actually take you into a sideshow. And then he did the blockhead where they drive the nail into his face, you know, and he did all that. It's great. And John was another one of the performers there. And John not only does some routine with like a bullwhip, putting out like candles and things, but he also is impervious to electricity. I've seen him, watched him grab a hold of like a raw electrical wire and stick light bulbs to his skin, and they would glow. Like they had got a guy out of the audience, like hold a light bulb to him. It was really pretty wild. Anyway, it was fun because it was all in the nature of the old sideshow and the old freaks and all that old stuff. And then, of course, we went down and checked out the Minnesota Iceman. And, you don't want to take a picture of the Iceman. You're not allowed to do that. But you can see online on the Facebook page and things like that there's photos of me in the room with the Iceman. And the signs that I'm posing by in those photos are the actual original signs and tins that were brought with the Minnesota Iceman while he toured. So it's all right there, and I looked at it and all this. Now, that being said, there's a lot of things bounce back and forth about the Minnesota Iceman, if it's the real one, if it's not. I do know that they had some trouble in the past. When I say they, I'm talking about the man that originally had it, that the FBI got involved back in the late 50s and early 60s when he brought it out.
Right.
And they were claiming that if it was close to being a real person, that then he committed murder, and they were wanting to take a look at it and all this stuff. And then magically a lot of the original Iceman may have vanished, and this may be the original Iceman, or this may be a replica Iceman. I don't know the whole thing. It was very unique to see. I will say that. And if it's worth going to see, it was great. I enjoyed it. It's just cool because it's part of American history. You know what I mean? It really is.
No,
it's
absolutely.
a part of the American fun. Then the next day, like you alluded to, is I went to the Zero Gravity Institute. And for those of you that don't know, it's basically a deprivation, like a sensory deprivation tank, uh-huh, is what it is. It's not, though, that always seems to have a negative connotation to it. There was nothing negative about this at all. This tank is enormous that they put you in. Now, what it actually is this is a large tank, and I mean, like, I believe it was a 7 by 8 by 8, big square tank, okay? It's huge.
Right.
And it is, they have about 10 inches of water in the bottom. And in that 10 inches of water is 1,200 pounds of Epsom salt dissolved into that water.
Wow.
And the water is kept at a constant 93.5 degrees. And what you do is you actually get in this tank and lie down. You get your earplugs in, you lie down, and you're 100% buoyant. You close the door. The lights dim in the tank till they're completely off. There's no light coming in from the outside. It's 100% darkness. So it will be the first time your body is void, or your mind, let's say, is void of any outside interference or anything. There's no stimuli to make you think, to make you move, nothing. The water at 93.5 is the exact same as your skin temperature.
Right.
So you don't feel the water.
You don't feel nothing. You don't feel like you're just floating.
It feels like you're totally weightless. You do feel a little bit of the water, I guess, from just the external touch, from like the hair on your arms mm-hmm. and things. You can feel a little of that. But not like you do in a pool or anything, not where you can tell
and it's
you're
pitch
inside.
Black.
It is as black as the inside of a coffin on a moonless night. That's how black it is. If anyone's ever been to like Carlsbad Caverns or anything, you know in the very bottom of the caverns, they turn the lights off. And Kyle and I was discussing this. I was telling him this off air. We've both been, of course. And you can't see your hand in front of your face. People talk about that darkness. It's so dark in this tank that you don't know your eyes are opened or closed except feeling that they're opened or closed by when you're moving your eyelids. Other than that, you can't tell.
Wow.
Now, when I first got into the tank, it truly is a life-changing thing, and I'll explain to everybody what happened so maybe they don't get too crazy bored with all this, but what happened to me was I stepped over into the tank, I lied down, you know, I went ahead and closed the door, I lied down.
You're totally naked.
You're totally nude. You lie down in there, the lights dim, there you are. My mind starts racing almost to like a panic level. And I don't get anxiety. I don't even know what that is. You know, I know people that have dealt with anxiety attacks and panic attacks and things. I don't know what that is. I don't deal with that. I don't relate to that. But if it's anything like what I went through in this tank, I feel so bad for people that relate to that because it's. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm talking the first, I would say, minute or two of in the tank. It wasn't an anxiety. It was my mind racing. It was so busy because it was looking for any external stimuli for me to grasp onto, to focus on.
Right.
So I'm looking like crazy. And I don't
your
even realize
brain's
I'm
finally
doing it.
Deprived of everything.
Of everything.
You're never in a situation in life where you're totally deprived of everything.
Yes. And that's
so
what
that's
happened.
Exactly what it's doing. It's trying to figure out what's going on.
It's yeah, exactly. It's looking for something. And then like I told you before the show is I felt like I started spinning. Like I was spinning counterclockwise.
Of course you weren't.
I wasn't moving at all.
But you felt like you were.
But I felt like for, you know, if you've ever been to a bar or been out to a party and you've been overserved and you've tried to lay down in the evening after being overserved and you kind of get that spinny feeling on the bed, it was kind of like that, but much more of a controlled spin, if that makes sense. I could tell I was moving. You know, it wasn't like a stomach upset, your head hurt. It wasn't that kind of thing. It was movement. I honestly felt like a gyroscope. I'm moving, woom, woom, woom. And all of a sudden, it was like I finally told my mind, you're really not moving. You're just sitting in a tank of water. You're lying in this tank of water.
Right.
And like I told you, it was like that clip from Contact with Jodie Foster when the chair broke loose and all of a sudden, boom, she was at peace. You know, she was in a little capsule.
So
it was spinning.
Shooting,
just really shaking and boom, she's totally loose. That's what it felt like. When I finally realized that, click, I was totally weightless. And that's when the vision started.
Oh, tell me about it.
I had what looked like it started out above my head, about as big as a number two pencil eraser up in space above me. Now, mind you, it's total darkness, so it's
like
vast.
Like an orb?
It came out like a flower, like the petals of a flower rolling out, and it was a very vibrant, dark blue. And it started getting bigger and bigger, and it got about as big around as a hubcap above my head. What looked like 4 foot above.
We're talking
me.
Like 22s or just standard size?
Standards. I'd say 18s. We'll say 18s.
Okay.
So it's moving and it's folding in and out of itself. And as it starts folding in and out of itself, I'm blinking and closing my eyes. When I close my eyes, I can't see it. When I open my eyes, I see the color.
So it's staying there.
It's staying right there moving. Then it looked like dark clouds, very dark black clouds in all the corners of the tank started moving and coming in above that blue light, like it was a wormhole.
Now, there's no way they didn't have some kind of LED TV screen on
no,
the
there's
ceiling.
Nothing
you
in
know
there.
What I'm saying?
Well, I looked before I got in. I checked the whole tank out
to make sure that there's no lighting that comes on. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's only one light, and it's underwater behind you, like where I laid my head. Anyhow, so it looks like a wormhole. All this is going on. I'm working on my breathing. I'm trying to do like some meditative breathing. I'm really trying to get into it. And every time my heart would beat, I have these wax earplugs in my ears, and you know, my face is just out of the water. Every time my heart would beat, the outline of my body is like an aura, a color aura, like a colored ring, but in the shape of my body, would emit off of it like a smoke ring and go up towards that blue flower thing in the air, exactly, levitate up, and then it would almost like and turn into a mist, evaporate into that. And every time my heart would beat, it would just like almost like every time one got there, the other would start, boom. And every time my heart would beat, there would be another smoke ring of my body aura going up. Boom, boom. And this went
on. That's insane.
It honestly felt like I was in the tank. I know this sounds weird, 15 to 20 minutes, but then it would feel like each stage lasted hours. Like you were like, whoa, you know, like I'm in there. I'm like, I don't know how long it lasted, me looking at those colors, me having all that happen. Then all of a sudden it was gone. It just all kind of turned into a wisp. There was a few like rings and fingers and ringlets of strange orange and red colors come out of the sides. And then it all just kind of spun into a mist and was gone. And then it felt like something pushed me from behind like a catapult. And it felt like it slung me a million miles an hour. And all of a second, click, I was stuck in the middle of like a vacuum of space. And it was the most peaceful, the most tranquil. It was almost like a happiness, like almost like a tearful happiness that you're stuck in there. Like you're so relaxed. You're so happy. You feel so good. And then I was like in the zone. It was just, I was breathing and then I would forget to breathe. Like sometimes I would catch myself just like, oh, because I'm thinking about so much. It's like, then my body's like, hey, don't forget about us too.
Yeah.
You know, and like, oh, and then real lowly and real slowly, the lights came on in the tank. I'd already been in there an hour. The lights came on in the tank. And then it was like being returned to Earth after being weightless. I kind of set up in the tank where I could get my feet on it, and it took, and they'll even tell you, they tell you when you get there, they tell you in the pamphlets that you can get online, you read it online, don't get in a hurry. When the lights come on, take your time, because they know it's a little bit, it's tricky. Now, right outside the door is a shower, and you shower with their soaps and things before you get in. You
strip all the your salt body, water yeah. and stuff.
Well, you strip your body clean before you get in. You don't want to tear anything over there. Now, they filter it 6 times before and after you use the tank. It is all UV filtered. This thing is unbelievably sterile when you get in it. So you don't want to be the guy that contributes to, you know, making it any dirtier. So when you get out, you wash the Epsom salt off of you. Kyle, it took me probably 10 minutes after I got out of that tank in that shower to even focus on what I was doing, because I wasn't sure if I was still in the tank or I was in the shower. I wasn't sure about what my reality was at that point. When I finally got done with that, I was supposed to get a massage afterwards. You know, that was because my wife really wanted a massage. So she actually got the massage first. They have 4 float tanks there. And the masseuse, they couldn't get another one in there because it was kind of a spur of the moment type thing. So anyhow, she had the massage first and I floated first. And then the massage therapist was waiting for me. And then I got to talk to them about my experience and all that. And they're great people down there. The massage therapist's name's Tyler. Tyler is unbelievable. Katie is one of the little gals that works down there. Kevin and his wife that own it, they're all wonderful, wonderful people. It's very tranquil. Everybody is very low spoken. I mean, they help you. Nobody rushes you. It's not like rush in and get it done and get out. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
They even have a sitting room for you. When you're done, you actually go to this little room, like a little waiting area that's real low and it's real, you know, soft and nice music and mellow music. And you actually can sit there and reflect. And if you want to tell somebody, they'll listen. If you don't want to tell anybody, they'll let you just leave you alone. It was one of those things. Kevin, the man that owns it, has been doing it since the 80s. And he just finished up like 100 floats in 100 days. And for anybody that's ever listened to Joe Rogan or anything like that, you can also go to Aubrey Marcus has a podcast called The Warrior Poet or Warrior Poet Project. And if you go and listen to the one with the Zero Gravity Institute, then you'll listen to Kevin talk about it and all that. But folks, if you're really into wanting to expand yourself, and if any of you are into any kind of any type of meditation or yoga or Reiki or anything of the sort, I mean, anything spiritual or psychic energy wise, anything, I would really, really suggest that you go and give this a try.
Is this like a franchise, or is it Zero Gravity Institute is only one place?
It's just his. Now, there are dozens of these. There's places all around that do it.
Right.
They use different tanks. The only difference is that Kevin designed this tank. These tanks that he uses, he designs himself. Everything is built himself. It's all automated. It's the bigger tanks. A lot of tanks aren't that size. Some of them aren't as big. Some of them, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's one of those things that I'm a proponent for it 100% now.
And I've always wanted to try it. Well, now I want to even more.
We're going
to
go in probably in a few weeks. I'm going to drag your ass and we're going to have to go do it. I'm going to have to take you just because I want, I went down there because we were going to Austin to the Museum of the Weird and things anyway, but there's one right over here in Dallas that we're going to go to that are friends of theirs from down there in Austin. So we're going to go. You're going to have to go because I want to know now. I want to see what you think about it after I toss you in there and let you sit for an hour. Next thing I go, I'll go for 90 minutes. But folks, seriously, if you have muscle soreness, aches, stiffness, you want to get away, if you love massages, you love meditation, you love anything like that, do yourself a favor. Look for any flotation tank area, do a little research into it, and please give it a whirl. And if you've already had the experiences and you really enjoyed it, shoot us an email, expandedperspectives.com.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can tweet us, something like that. Shoot us some emails. Let us know what y'all think about it. I'd love to hear some other people's experiences with it because mine was wonderful.
Well, I've got to definitely get myself down there and try to float myself. If there's any other listeners out there that want to float, I urge you try it.
I'm telling you, it really is. It's life changing. I had listened to a bunch of this and read a bunch of stuff on it, but it's like a lot of those things. You don't really know it till you try it.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And, John Anthony West has a quote and he always relays a bunch of that to Egypt, and he relays it to sex. And that's kind of the way this is. You can read about it and you can see it, but until you experience yourself, you really don't know what they're talking about. And that's what that float tank really was for me. You can read about it all you want to. You can see them all you want to. You can learn about other people's experiences. But until you get in there and do it, you really don't know what it's about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank everybody thanks to everyone for listening to this week's show. Stick with us. Rate and review the show on iTunes for us or Stitcher or wherever you listen to us. Visit our website, expandedperspectives.com. Email the show with your own stories, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, you know what to do, people.
Yeah, you can find us real easy. And yeah, thanks for sticking around. We've had a great time, and we're just going to keep slinging out more and more episodes and getting more and more crazy stories. We've got some good stories been emailed to us. We're going to jump on that.
Absolutely.
We got some really good stuff coming up next week. I've been digging around. I've got some really wild stuff I'm going to bring up. So yeah, it's a great time. So everybody stay safe. And me and Kyle, man, we love you. We really do. We really
absolutely
do appreciate
love
that.
We everybody
got
out
but
there.
Love for everybody, man. We've had a great time. So
have a good week, and we will see you next Monday.
Stay safe, everyone.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.